Exploring the importance of having the right skills to succeed. This is Skillfully Speaking, supported by Babcock International, presented by Skills Ambassador Jackie Grubb.
Welcome to Skillfully Speaking. I'm your host, Jackie Grubb, and today I am so pleased to welcome a familiar face from our TV screens, the actor Melissa Johns. You'll have seen her in Coronation Street, Grantchester, and in the much-talked-about Adolescence. As well as her stage and screen work, Melissa is a passionate advocate for better representation of disability on TV and in theatre. A very warm welcome, Melissa.
Hello, how lovely to be here.
How are you this morning?
I am feeling fantastic. I'm still buzzing from last night's event.
It was just such an honour for you to attend our Student Awards last night.
The privilege was all mine. It was such a gorgeous night and I just feel very lucky to have been a part of it. It was lovely.
And I feel like I've known you for years and all of our stakeholders, students, parents, all those employers could all resonate from some of the things that you were saying. So how special was that? So a huge thank you.
You're so welcome. I kept thinking, what are we going to talk about today? I'm pretty sure I've told you my whole life story. You'll be wondering what to ask me, but hopefully there's a few things we can still chat about.
Well, I've got it all stored in there, which really leads me nicely onto the first question that I'm going to ask you, which is quite simple, really. It's just, please tell us about your journey in acting and how did you get that first break?
In a nutshell, I joined our local amateur dramatic society. Big shout out for amateur dramatic societies. They don't get the recognition or the funding that they should get. It's such a special place. And I hugely encourage people to join local things like that because, well, for me, it changed my life. Admittedly, I was 8 when I joined, but I did the pantomime. And then I just couldn't get enough of that feeling. I absolutely loved it. I was on stage and it felt amazing. And my mum was actually the cleaner of the local theatre where the amateur dramatics took place. So she would be cleaning. And whilst she was cleaning, myself and my little brother would get up on stage and start performing little bits and pieces. And so it went from there, really. And I went through school. I did dance and drama for GCSE, dance and drama for A-level. Then I took a year out. And when I came back, I started auditioning for drama schools. And I was told that people like you, people like me being, I was born without my right hand and forearm. And I was told a lot, you know, you won't get into drama schools. There aren't jobs for people like you. You've only got to look around on the screen. People like you on our screens. Mm-hmm. And so if you work backwards, that means that they're less likely to take disabled people into drama schools and so on. But I don't like being told no. Mm-hmm. I really hate it. Mm. If it's a final no, and I know I've tried every possible avenue, then fine, I'll sit down and have a cuppa and take it. But I wasn't prepared to take no. So I auditioned for drama schools and I got into a drama school called East 15 Acting School, which was just incredible, and did my 3 years there, which was wonderful. And I'd say when I first graduated, I was lucky enough to do medical dramas. We need things like medical dramas. Yeah, unfortunately, we're at a stage where we're struggling a little bit to keep those sort of dramas going, those long-running, almost soaps going. But that's where you learn your craft. It's on those jobs where you learn what it's like to be in front of the camera. You learn what different things mean when people are asking about camera angles and camera length. So yeah, my very first one was, gosh, I think Casualty. I remember getting the audition through and I said to my mum, it was over the summer holidays and I think I'd gone back to spend some time with my parents on the Welsh border. And that's when this audition was. And mum said, well, let's drive and I'll come with you. So we got to Elstree Studios, BBC Studios, and mum was told not to leave because it's all security and had to have passes for this and passes for that. And I said, mum, I've got the pass, but actually you need to stay in the car. Well, she didn't listen, did she? She ended up in the canteen. She was talking to the people that run the canteen. And we were on the way back and she said, I think you got that one. Aww. And I did. A couple of days later, I got the phone call and it was, oh, I was so nervous before that job, but it was lovely. It was just a lovely little episode.
Yeah.
And that's when it all started, really.
Melissa, we have to be grateful for our parents, don't we? Because they brought us into the world, end of. Can you tell us a little bit about your mum and what she's done for you and how all that feels?
Well, I think she probably refuses to take no. Well, she does. She refuses to take no for an answer, which is probably where I've got it from. She will argue till the end of the earth, and that's probably where I've got
it from. That sounds familiar to me.
We do, actually.
I think I've probably taken those really strong parts and used them in a way that I've needed to use them. And Jason and I, our parents have been so supportive. Our dad is a real character. He's actually a Romani gypsy and he can't read or write. But my gosh, the things that he can do creatively, you know, he works on people's gardens and he's just such a performer. He's such a natural performer that I think that's where Jason
and I... where you get that from,
absolutely. So if you've got a mixture of natural performer and then a woman who's never taken no for an answer, that's probably come together quite well for me.
This podcast is a lot about storytelling. It's a lot about people's journeys and a real focus on skills. So how do you believe the skills that you had back then compare to those that you've acquired on the way?
I think that resilience has probably been the biggest skill that I have needed.
Yeah.
And I think having a disability and living in a world where people have assumptions of disability, quite often we live in a world where actually society are more concerned with my disability than I am. And so that means that often I have had to do a bit of proving, and that comes with resilience. I think what I have done, though, as I've got older, is add kindness to that, because it's so easy, isn't it, to say you must be resilient, you know, you've got to fight back. And all of those things are true, absolutely. But we're all human beings at the end of the day, and we have to be so, so kind to ourselves. And I think maybe that resilience was quite strong at one point, and I maybe wasn't looking after myself in the way that I should have. And as I got older, I just realised how much I really needed to be kind to myself. And actually, if that comment that somebody said hurt, I could allow myself a couple of days to go, oh, that felt a little bit rubbish and that hurt me a little bit. And it's okay for me to recognise that.
Yeah.
And no, I probably won't let it change the course of my life, but I will give myself a minute to let it sink in. So I think there is a lot to be said for, yes, resilience, absolutely, but coating it in so much kindness for yourself.
Yeah. Love and kindness all the way up.
Absolutely,
say.
Always.
And that resilience, that's a match made in heaven.
And there. Plymouth is full of love and kindness.
Yay!
I am realising that. What a place.
So as a young disabled female actor, what barriers did you face and what skills or strategies helped you to really overcome them?
I think the first thing in terms of a barrier for any actor is that it's a hard industry.
Yeah.
And I think what annoys me, though, is how much we're told that. The amount of people that early on in my career would say to me, you know, it's a very difficult industry. And so I do make sure now that I don't say that to aspiring actors, because I think you already know that. You know, you're not silly. Of course you know that this is difficult. You don't need me coming in saying this is very hard. But I think absolutely, when you look different to other people and when you maybe have access requirements that mean that you might need something a little bit differently, not necessarily extra. I think that's a myth.
Yeah.
People often think, oh, she's going to need something extra. Often, no, I don't need anything extra. I might just need it done a little bit differently. But I think one of the biggest things is changing people's perceptions, because people assume that if you are a disabled actor, that has to play into the storyline. Well, we can't just have someone with one arm on TV. We haven't explained it. It's so fascinating, isn't it? Because I certainly don't go around in my everyday life sort of going, hi, lovely to meet you. Can I have a decaf mocha with oat milk? And all the reason I've got one arm is because I was born like it. I don't have to go about my daily life explaining why. And I just think we should give audiences far more credit. So many people really don't mind, don't care. If they do, they'll Google it. I mean, interestingly, one of the most Googled things about my name is what happened to Melissa Johns's arm, which I find hilarious. It either needs to be turned into a murder mystery show or some sort of game show, doesn't it?
What did you actually got the data for that, and that's actually
Maybe it's the second or third most Googled thing under my name is what happened to Melissa Johns's arm, which, as I say, should be a show in itself. Maybe I'll pitch that one day. They can find out if they really want to know.
Yeah.
But disability isn't a character trait. So I think for me, one of the barriers was trying to really get producers, exec producers, commissioners, writers, directors to understand, please just create the character you want to create.
Yeah.
Is she funny? What's her job? What does she fear most in life? What does she want most in life? Create the character that you want. I'll add the disability.
Yeah.
You don't need to write that. You don't need to change anything. That will be done by simply getting a disabled actor to play this role. And so I just think opening up people's minds to go, you don't have to do anything different. Write the show that you want to write and just see disabled actors for those roles.
Yeah.
There might be one little thing you might want to tweak that might be exciting, but it will never, ever, ever be at detriment to the show.
You're really making me reflect there, because I've got a great nephew who's an actor, and I know that when he's got a show that he's appearing in, it's all great. And then in between, how difficult that is. So on top of what you've just described to us, gosh, you must be so strong, so resilient.
Sometimes that does get draining. You know, a lot of the time in the disabled community, we say, oh, if we can just try to teach people now, then maybe we won't have to be the educators forever.
Yeah,
maybe one day we can just go in and do our job. But, you know, I do think I'm very fortunate, and I'm so lucky for the career that I have, and I love it, and the changes are being made and it's exciting.
Yeah.
But absolutely, it is different. I don't just get to go in and be an actor and do my job. You know, I have to carry my little soapbox around with me because I know someone's going to say something at some point. They might say something like, oh, I've heard you're not allowed to say disabled anymore.
Yeah.
And I have to get on my soapbox and say, well, actually, disabled isn't a dirty word.
No.
You are allowed to say it. And I just think, but other people from underrepresented groups will get that. Anyone who doesn't see themselves represented on TV will also have that, oh, I've heard you can't say this now. Well, actually, have you ever spoken to somebody with that lived experience? But what that does is I'm grateful that I get to do it, but it can be draining. And doing it with a smile.
Yeah.
It's always best if you do it with a smile. Even that can get a bit tiring.
And that's why I think it's, well, I don't think, I know, it resonated so much to, in particular, all our students last night and the feedback that you had. And so what advice would you pass on to people like yourself? Those people that are looking out to start the same type of thing as you in industry, what would you say to them?
I think it really is about taking things moment by moment. And that's really hard in this industry because you're always thinking ahead to the next job. What's the next job? Where's the next paycheck coming from? Am I going to afford my rent or mortgage? But actually, I think it's about finding so many other things that relight your fire. Someone once said to me that working in the arts and screen industries is a bit like having a mixing board.
Mm.
And sometimes your delivery of drama workshops might go up because your acting's a little bit quiet at the moment. Maybe you'll go and start a podcast with a friend because other things might be a bit quieter. Then when that takes off, maybe the podcast might have to come down a little bit. Find all the things that you're good at and that you love, because I think if you just base your happiness in, I'm only happy when I'm on stage, I'm only happy when I'm on a TV set, actually, we won't be happy that often, or at least content.
Yeah.
And I think for me, finding other things that really get the fire in my belly going are really important. And I think then I don't look like I'm desperate for jobs because I'm sort of going, my next job would be lovely.
Yeah.
I'm also having a really lovely time doing this drama workshop with these GCSE students.
Yeah.
I'm also having a really great time advocating for disabled representation on screens. Find all of the things that relight your fire and make up a package of it. They will always complement each other. But, you know, I think for so long we've heard this phrase, a jack of all trades, king of none. And I don't think that's true at all. I think you can be a king, a queen, or whatever, of as many trades as you want. And they will all come together in the way that they are meant to.
Yeah.
So don't be scared of finding more than one thing that you are good at and that you enjoy, because they will always complement each other.
Yeah. Your stories and your journey, your life journey, was so powerful. And I've already had the privilege, and a lot of other people have, of listening to it last night. So can you pick out those things that mean the most to you that you'd like to share?
As a kind of overview, and some of the things that I spoke about last night were very much around body image. They were about the way that I saw myself growing up, and I didn't really grow up seeing people that looked like me with less limbs. And that ended up having a bit of a negative impact on the way that I certainly carried myself through teenage years and 20s. And people are always shocked because they think that you chose to be an actor. That's everyone's looking at you. And actually, I don't really know what the psychology is behind it. Maybe one of those fantastic students that want to go into psychology that I met last night will be able to analyse this. But for some reason, there's just such a segregation between being an actor and between being myself. I mean, I started the speech last night saying that you would assume that maybe I wouldn't be nervous standing up and talking in front of 200 people. But I am, because I'm not playing someone. I'm me. I'm Melissa Johns. And Melissa Johns is a working class disabled actress and the daughter of a non-reading writing Romany gypsy and the daughter of a factory girl from the Welsh border. And as I said last night, I have grown up living in boxes that society have said maybe shouldn't achieve the things that they want in life. And I think I'm just so happy that now in my 30s, I am so, so proud of being in those boxes. But actually, one of the biggest things that is the through line is this thing about body image. Yeah. I hated my body growing up, and you don't have to have a disability to have not yet accepted, embraced, celebrated a part of your body. Every single person has got something that they know exactly what to wear. They know how to stand in photos. They know how to sit at the dinner table. They know how to be if they're with a partner. They just know how to completely manipulate their bodies because there's just one or two things that they're just not happy with. We should be better than that now. Yeah. The world should be better than that. Not us. We're a product of what we're told. The world should be more accepting of that. But for so many years, it wasn't, still isn't fully. And I was very much the result of somebody that struggled with the way that I looked. And so if we fast forward just after I left Coronation Street for the first time, because I went in and out a couple of times.
Yeah.
After the first time, I had a phone call from my agent and it was Blue Monday, which is meant to be a sad day in the year.
Is that the Blue Monday in January?
It is,
how many days after?
It's the third Monday. And it's the Monday before payday. It's the one just before that comes. Although I have heard since that it's a tourism trick. And so it was a way of getting people to book holidays. Yeah. Anyway, I remember waking up that morning thinking, oh, it's Blue Monday today. I must make an effort to really get through today and be okay. Which was just so strange because one of the most life-altering things happened that day in that I am co-director of an organisation called Triple C. We're a BAFTA-winning organisation that create projects that break down the barriers for deaf, disabled and neurodivergent people accessing arts and screen. And we'd gone in to have a meeting to try and get drama back on the curriculum in SEN schools. So my phone had been on silent. And I had 21 missed calls from my agent and I listened to a voice message and it said, don't answer the phone to anybody. I need you to call me back. So I called her back and I remember the first thing she said was, are you sat down? And I thought, oh, that's such a strange one. And then she said, and she does say this whenever she delivers any news to me, her name's Nikki and she's wonderful. Even if she's told me something brilliant, she'll say, are you near a road? She says it to me every time. I think she has a fear of emotion taking over with whatever you're being told and you not being fully aware of your surroundings. And she said, I'm so sorry, a newspaper have called and they have got hold of naked photos of you and it's going to be in the papers with a story.
Wow.
It was devastating and my head filled with loads of stuff. Why? Who? What? What are my family going to say? Actually, my acting career seemed to not come to mind first of all. I suddenly thought about letting my family down or feeling shame. Suddenly thinking, oh my gosh, this body that I've hidden away is going to be public property. That's what it's classed as. When photos are leaked, once they're online, you can't have them taken down. They are classed as public property. There were just so many emotions that I had to deal with and the feeling of not having much control. You know, I cried for a couple of hours and then I just couldn't stand this feeling of not having any control. So I forced myself to go onto the internet and look for myself. And when I'd seen the way that my body was just being completely depicted with words, not just as a woman, but as a disabled woman.
Yeah.
As you can imagine, like most of us, we've all been bullied in our lives. We've all had some horrible things said about us. But actually, I'd never read anything like I'd read that day. Never in my life. And I just got so angry, boundaried anger, because I'm not very good at letting go. So my anger's not normally explosive. It's normally anger that then gets funneled into something. And what it got funneled into was me calling my agent and saying, gosh, we can't let this happen, can we? I just sort of said, you know what? I said, I have spoken so badly about my body for years.
Yeah.
I have disrespected it. I have given it the most negative words. I have talked about myself in a way that I wouldn't talk about my worst enemy. And now I'm watching somebody else do it. And you know what? That little girl that is still there, all our little person is still there. They're with us. Our inner child is with us every single day. And I suddenly just had this vision of this little girl. And I thought, well, you don't deserve that, do you? You don't deserve what I've been saying to you. And you certainly don't deserve what these people on the internet are saying to you. And then I started to realize that this isn't just happening to women in the media. This is happening all over the shop.
Mm.
This is happening to school kids getting changed in changing rooms and people taking photos and saying, if you don't do this, I'll release this photo. So what we're doing is we're using bodies as a weapon. We're using shaming of bodies as a weapon. And I thought, oh, I can't sit back and not do anything. I don't know if there's much I can change, but gosh, I've got to do something. So that's when we really started with it, a statement which grew and grew and ended up being on talk shows and radio shows and paper interviews, TV shows, Loose Women, all of these different shows being able to talk about what had happened. And suddenly it hit the papers about a week later because the paper did say to us, we don't know whether we'll release it today or when her next acting job comes out. So I didn't know how long I was going to have to sit on this.
Yeah.
Thankfully, it was a week. That was on the Monday. The Monday I found out, I went to bed that night thinking, do you know what? I feel a bit empowered. I think we're going to do something about this. I've still got to talk to my mum and dad about what's happened, but it's going to be okay. This is just a very side tangent to show you what sort of a week it was to be a woman.
Yeah.
I woke up the next morning, a letter from the NHS came through the door. My smear test results, you've got precancerous cells of the highest form on your cervix.
Everything was coming for every angle.
From every angle, just as a woman, I was attacked at every level, it felt. And by the end of the week, it hit the papers. And the first paper said how this was a tragedy. I was distraught. I was ashamed. And I said, that wasn't my words at all. And I think that hurt more.
Yeah.
The fact that this thing had happened, I couldn't do anything about that. But my response got taken away from me. So my response that was, this is how I feel about it, they just made up their own words. So we released it all ourselves. We went, if you're going to not tell my story, I'll tell it myself. So agency, press office, we released it ourselves. And suddenly all of these newspapers started coming through with these incredible headlines. Like, I remember the Manchester Evening News said, we can't get enough of the way Melissa Johns is dealing with this. And all of these like empowering headlines started coming through. And it was wonderful. And a year later, I worked with an incredible writer called Debbie Oates, who wrote a Radio 4 drama, which took inspiration from it. That was called In My Own Skin. A year after that, I created a one-woman theatre show, which toured the UK. And then from that, we got some TV offers from production companies. And now we are turning Snatched, the show that I wrote about what happened, into a TV drama.
So from your own experience, you can feel the impact of how you've changed people's lives and probably saved lives as well.
I hope that it's made some difference. It's always nice if you think that maybe you've made a bit of a difference to people. But as I say, when something like this happens, I hate the idea that the thing that we feel is shame about our bodies.
Yeah.
We should be angry when things like this happen because we have our privacy disrespected. That's what we should be angry at. But the idea that we should be angry at our own bodies. Yeah, I found out that week that we have women that won't go to mammograms because they're so nervous about the way their body looks. We have women not going to their cervical smear tests because they're worried about the way their body looks. We are literally putting ourselves at risk because of our lack of confidence in the way that we look.
Mm.
And something has to be done about that.
If you want to build on your skills and get yourself on the right path to success, visit the City College Plymouth website, cityplym.ac.uk. You can hook up with courses, download information packs, guides, and much more. Or find us on social media. We're Skillfully Speaking Podcast on Instagram and Skillfully Speaking on Facebook and LinkedIn. Skillfully Speaking, where hidden skills are revealed. Now back to the conversation.
Do you have a view on social media, that we live in a world of perfectionism? You talked about everybody poses this way for this side of the camera. This is the angle to get the best photograph.
Yeah. I think use social media how you think you need to use it.
Mm.
But know, as long as you're using it knowing that it, of course, doesn't reflect real life. And it's okay if it doesn't. I don't necessarily put my real life on social media, but that's because I don't feel I need to. I have a lot of people that I talk to, and you know, if I've got problems, I'll go and talk to them about it. And I quite like being able to look back through my social media at the very, very well put together with Taylor Swift playing in the background engagement video, or the okay posts of our wedding. And of course, that wasn't absolutely representative of the day, but I love looking back at it in that way because it makes me smile. But I do that knowing that that isn't always real life.
Mm.
So I just think with social media, use it how you want to use it, but just keep doing a reality check on it.
Yeah.
If you want your page to just be full of lovely, brilliant, colour coordinated, beautiful things, then that's a form of art. Do it. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But let's keep doing reality checks on it and remember that, yeah, of course it's not real life.
But it's keeping grounded. And your wedding was beautiful because I've seen the video.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there you go. So you're inspiring so many people. Who are your role models and who inspires you?
Oh my gosh, that's such a big one, isn't it? I feel like I've got a brain freeze because I feel like so many people come to mind.
Is it a combination of so many
people? I think it's
then?
Such a combination. Yeah. I will say, this is a really random one, and I didn't think I was going to say this, but it has just come to my head. Amazing actress Julie Hesmondalsh, who was obviously in Coronation Street herself for years, playing Hayley Cropper. I wouldn't want to make out like that's the only thing Julie's done, because Julie has done so many wonderful things, most recently Mr. Bates versus the Post Office, but has also set up with other brilliant people, theatre companies and organisations. And I just remember when I moved to Manchester and I didn't know anyone, I met her at a theatre and she just gave me her phone number and she just said, anything that I can do to help, I will. And then her organisation put on a monologue night and she said, can you be one of the actors in it? And it was just those tiny little things that she didn't need to do. I was a random person that walked into the theatre that night. And I think when you watch people like that elevate the people around them, it makes you want to do the same. I spent most of last night saying to the people I met, tag me in stuff, and if you need me to share something or if you want me to hop on a Zoom for the organisation, just tell me what I can help with. And of course you can't do everything because there's only so many hours in a day, but I just think doing stuff like that for other people will always feel really wonderful. And I've watched that firsthand from other women doing it.
That's where it goes really deep and meaningful, doesn't it? Because those small acts of kindness that you never forget, there can be material things, but that belonging and that community feel. So I know that you moved from London because you lived in London for a number of years, didn't you? And then you moved to Manchester with a friend. So for somebody to reach out and make you feel secure and give that act of kindness,
you remember it for the rest of your life.
Just moving on to a slightly different subject, you've co-found Quite Frankly Theatre. So what inspired you to co-found that, and how is it helping young people to build confidence in creative skills?
Firstly, I'm a bit of a hustler. I think people that are in this industry, you've got to be a bit of a hustler. Yeah. You've got to look at the gaps, look
That's
at the market.
That's a nice juicy word, isn't it?
You've really got to throw yourself into the hustle. And look, when it works out well, the hustle feels good. When it's not working so well, the hustle can feel a bit difficult. But on a whole, when it works out, and I was living in London and getting little acting jobs here and there, like casualty. Yeah. But my pay the bills job was that I was part of an agency doing teaching assistant work.
Oh.
So I would ring up at 7 a.m. and say, it's Melissa, I'm free for work today. And then within the hour, they'd say, yeah, we can send you to this school here. And it was wonderful to be able to go and do it, but an awful way for me personally to start my day because I never knew where I was going.
You knew what you were going to be doing.
In the summer holidays, you have no work. So I rang my brother. It's just the two of us. There's 9 years between us and we're incredibly close.
Is there 9 years between
There's
you?
There's 9 years between
oh
us.
Oh my goodness.
Yes, I know. He's a fantastic actor. He's kind of stepped back from acting now to look at more behind the scenes stuff, but he's an amazing actor and very funny. And I said, I wonder if I come home in the summer holidays, if we hire a space, I think we could do a week's drama workshops. I think we could do like a play in a week. And especially because Ledbury, the little town that we're from, it's a lovely little town.
Yeah.
It's a town where actually I think the young people would really benefit from that. So we looked into it and we hired the Methodist Church and they were so good. They hardly charged us anything. They knew that we didn't know how much money we were going to make from this. So they just went, look, you give us this and we'll do it. But what that meant was we hardly charged anything. So I remember our very first drama workshop week, we charged £50 for the week. So this was Monday to Friday, 9 a.m. till 4 p.m. And at the end of the week, the young people put a play on. And we had two age groups. We started off with 7 years old and the oldest was 16. And I think we had about 30 something kids at our first one.
Gosh, I bet the parents were grateful.
They were very grateful. That was the thing. You did have to sort of let people know that this was a drama workshop. Yeah. We were not just cheap babysitters. And, you know, we had chaperones that would come in and support us. So we did everything by the book. So I guess what I'm saying is, there wasn't, first of all, this big revelation of me sitting there thinking, I'd be lying if I said I realised that Ledbury needed this. Actually, what it came from was survival. I needed to survive for 6 weeks of the holiday.
Yeah.
And how was I going to do this?
Yeah.
Well, what am I good at? I think I'm all right at acting. I really like working with young people and I love working with young people that love drama.
Yeah.
So how do we come together and do this? We got all the ingredients. It was the best week. We actually had two booked for that summer holidays. Financially, that was able to support me and Jason through the 6 week holiday. But what became so apparent at the end of it was that we just went, we are buzzing from this, and so are they. You know, those parents at the end would come and watch that play and they would go, I cannot believe you've done this in a week. And then the drive from there was that we'd get some kids that at the start of the week, they just didn't even want to say hello. They were so nervous. And just saying to them, you don't have to get up and perform.
Mm.
What else would you like to do? Have you ever written a poem? would you like to have a little go at writing a poem? We can see if one of the other young people wants to read that poem out, and maybe we can use that as a stimulus and we can create a little story around it. And suddenly these kids that just didn't have much confidence but were happy to maybe go and do a drawing in the corner or go and do a poem in the corner.
Yeah.
The encouragement and confidence they got when we then took that poem or that picture and we created something out of it,
yeah.
Suddenly they would get themselves more involved because they thought, well, I didn't have to stand up and do this, but what I did do was I just did that little drawing and now I'm watching other actors act that out. And I think that's something that has stayed really core to it ever since. Jason's been brilliant at taking over and doing a lot more of that whilst I've been filming. I normally film a lot in the summer with Grantchester. And so Jason and his partner, Tammy, have been great at keeping that going. But I think what's lovely is I know that the ethos that we've created of this can be for anyone. You don't have to just want to be an actor.
Yeah.
You just want to be able to self-express. And we'll find a way of getting that in that end show at the end of the week.
And that's really shining through. Whoever you are, whatever your starting point is, it's about self-esteem, confidence, and wherever that starts, it doesn't matter.
Absolutely.
So you were absolutely loving what you were doing. The children were loving, learning and gaining confidence. And the parents were happy because the children weren't in
there. They spent 50 quid a week on their kid having a bit of fun. And it just all worked out. Yeah. And, you know, it's because we weren't greedy with it. We just did it for what we needed it for.
Yeah.
And actually what we needed was the starting point and we were able to grow it from there.
Yeah. So this year you've landed a part in the show that everyone's been talking about, and that's Adolescence.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a very little part in a very big show, which I will take. It was fantastic, mainly because of how different it was. It was filmed in a way that as an actor, you just go, this is incredible. Grantchester were amazing. They let me have 3 weeks off to be able to do it, which was great. But each episode was filmed in 3 weeks. So the first week, you're rehearsing, you're choreographing your track, you're learning where you need to go, where you don't need to go. It's like a dance. And then the second week, it's more of a technical rehearsal. And then in that third week, we're doing 2 takes a day.
Okay.
And the minute they call action, you're going. You're not stopping. This isn't like any other TV show in the way that it's done. The minute they call action, unless there's a technical issue or something goes really, really wrong, you're carrying on.
Well, the series touches on powerful themes as well, doesn't it? Like masculinity and the weight of social expectations. So how has this made you reflect on those things?
Well, it's interesting because, as I said before, I was a teaching assistant for so many years in between and alongside acting. And when I moved to Manchester, I was able to supply teach.
Yeah.
And so I worked in mainly secondary schools.
Yeah.
And I would see things like this happen where I was almost certain that some of the boys that were in the class didn't want to say the things that they said, but you could almost see the pressure pushing down on them until the words came out of their mouth. And I could never fully describe what I was seeing.
Yeah.
It was just this idea of, I don't think you mean that, and I don't think you want to say that, but my gosh, something is pushing down so hard that those words are just spurting out of your mouth.
Yeah.
And I think when adolescence came along, suddenly what I couldn't articulate when I was a supply teacher was coming out in front of us.
Yeah.
And hugely down to the talent of the young people in that show, because the young people that we got to work with were just incredible. They deserve every bit of success that's coming to them. But as I say, for me, it was really, really something quite special because I got to see it in two different lives. I got to see it as an actor telling the story of it.
Yeah.
And I also got to reflect on my time as a supply teacher working in secondary schools where I loved working with those young people. Teenagers are just amazing. Yeah, they are fantastic. Yeah. And they're going through loads of different changes. It's sort of their right to not ask you how you are. They're in their own world. But actually, what I would love more than anything is when that stereotype was knocked out of my hand straight away and someone would come into the class and I'd say, morning, how are you? And they'd say, yeah, I'm good, thank you, miss, how are you? And even just a how are you, I'd go, what is it about teenagers getting this really bad name? Because I can see that at the heart of every single person is such a good, good person.
Yeah.
That inner child is still there.
I totally agree with you because I'm wrapped up in teenagers every day in my job and get exactly the same. Melissa, I can't let you go though because I'm such an advocate for health and well-being that I want to know, what do you do to keep yourself healthy and well?
I talk. I don't know whether you've noticed that or not. I really, really, really love just speaking to people. And when they listen, not taking that with a pinch of salt.
Yeah.
But I think what I've learned to do is when it comes to mental health and well-being, and if I have something I need to talk about, I now phrase it when I talk to somebody as, I have something that I want to say and I just need you to listen. Or I phrase it as, particularly with my husband, it'll be one or the other.
Yeah.
I will say, I'm feeling really rubbish about this and I want some advice. Oh. But I'm really clear as to whether the person that I'm talking to, I just want them as a listening ear,
yeah,
or I want advice. Because I think one of the biggest things conflict comes from, if you're feeling a certain way, you're feeling emotional, something's happened, you speak to someone and they just straight away give you unsolicited advice. And you're not ready for it. You still want to sit in the crappiness of it for a little bit. You want to have a bit of a moan. You want to have a cry, eat some chocolate. You're not ready to hear the solution yet, mm-hmm, because that's okay. So I just think for me, as I've got older, I've just learnt to go, there's an issue and it is sitting not well with me and I'm feeling really not great and I do want to talk about it, but I need to know why I want to talk about it. So when I talk to that person, am I going to say, can I just talk to you about this and I don't actually need you to say anything? I just need you to listen to me.
So communication is vital.
Or saying, actually, I really need some help with how I tackle this. Would you mind having a chat with me about maybe some ways around this? Mm. But knowing what you want,
yeah,
can be really, really, really helpful.
Yeah. Thank you. Melissa Johns, it has been an absolute delight talking to you. Thank you so, so much.
Thank you. It has been really wonderful. And back to Plymouth I will come because I love it here.
Skillfully Speaking is supported by Babcock International. Visit babcockinternational.com. Presented by Jackie Grubb. Produced by Paul Philpott. Production support by Lisa Hartwell. Edited and mixed by Martin Burgess Moon. Video content by Mark Stevenson. Coordinated by Louise Greenleaf. Produced by Fresh Air Studios. Copyright City College Plymouth, all rights reserved.